What is up, Hockey IQ listeners? I'm here to chat about our newest sponsor, Sensarena. Your brain is one of the most important parts of your body. Why not invest in a tool that allows you to train it? With Sensarena, athletes can gain a competitive edge using VR training. Players are able to go through a scenario thousands of times without having to step foot on the ice. No more waiting around for puck touches or perfect scenarios. Sensarena can enhance reaction time, decision-making, and multitasking abilities, making you the next MVP. I mean, if the LA Kings are using it, it's got to be good. With our promo code HockeyIQ, you receive $50 off an annual plan purchase. Head on over to sensarena.com to check it all out.
On today's podcast, we have Rob Schremp. Everyone seems to know Rob Schremp. He's got hands like no one else, silkiest pair of mitts I've ever seen. Makes Patty Kane look rough. He's a great guy. He started 44 Vision Hockey. Really excited for this one. But before we get going, I want to give a shout out to our sponsor, Easy Crease. You just attach this to the net. You got a marker at the end. It makes a crease. It's perfect for those small-sided games. So, like I say, be kind. Give your goalie a good-looking crease. Dan, what's your takeaway?
That was a lot of fun. I grew up watching YouTube videos of Rob Schremp. So it was kind of like a cool experience to be on the other side of it and now get a chance to talk to him like 15 years later. What stood out to me, man, a lot stood out. I think that the line at the end of the podcast, learn one thing from every guy you play with. He said that Dan Bylsma taught him that. And I think that's unreal advice and something that I'm going to pass along to the players that I coach. So that's definitely something that stood out for me. How about you?
I loved how he talked about it from an offensive standpoint of breaking down the game into sectors and also routes. I think that's very important. People don't realize that as you go up the levels of getting consistent routes, allow you to have that consistency in your game and get the looks that you want that lead to creating a lot of offense. So
not only are routes, do routes make your game more effective as you go up the ranks, but it also makes you easier to play with because there's an expectation amongst your teammates that the things that you do to become successful are habits and not like one-off instances. So I also found that, you know, all that talk on routes to be fascinating. Good point, Greg.
Yeah, there's just so much in this episode that you need to stay for it all. There's not a minute that goes by that you're not learning something or taking a good question or a good thought away. So I'm really excited for this one.
Without further ado, our interview with Rob Schremp.
Welcome to the podcast, Rob Schremp. Glad you could join us after a nice day playing out on the pond.
Yeah, appreciate it. Thanks for pushing back, boys. I was happy to get out on the pond today and skate with some teammates and some buddies and enjoy the nature back to where it kind of started, pond hockey.
Yeah, that's awesome. So maybe if you could just give our listeners a quick background. You're in Europe now. We'll get into 44 Vision. I've got a bunch of follow-up questions there, but maybe just right now, like what you're doing on the ice, who you're playing with and things like that.
Yeah, so I live in Latvia now. My wife's Latvian. I met her when I played in the KHL here. So we relocated last May to the Latvia and in that time frame, I started skating a little bit and got asked to play for the team Mogo. It's in the Optibet Hockey League, the OHL. It's a Latvian league. So I joined them and I've been playing with them. I've played like 12 games now. So took a couple of years off from the game and then I came back and jumped on this team, while we're here. And it's been a lot of fun to get back into it and kind of shake the rust off a little bit.
Yeah. What's it like coming out of retirement, so to speak?
You know, it's for me that my hands were okay and my shots still pretty much there, but it's just the lungs. You know, I think it's kind of, maybe it's pretty obvious to say that, but like, and then the other thing too, is even when you're skating kind of practice or men's league pickup games, it's a total different ball game. When you actually drop the puck for a real game, you get that like metal taste on your tongue almost the first couple of games. It was hard, but it's been fun to kind of start to build my game back up piece by piece.
That's hilarious. I just had a player today. He's like, oh man, I was feeling like this sensation on my tongue. I'm like, yeah, that's just the iron in there and you're out of shape.
Yeah, get on the bike.
Exactly. So that's awesome. Well, happy to have you back in the game and obviously doing great things with 44 Vision Hockey. Kind of before we get into that, I'm curious, how do you watch a game to study it and get better?
Yeah, no, I think just watching for personal, my when I watch my game film, game shifts, it's just seeing where I made mistakes, where I could have, you know, made different plays or what other opportunities were available and what my choices were. And it's kind of studying those sort of things. Sometimes, you know, the game happens pretty fast. So it's, you think you saw something and that game film's huge, you know, it's very telling. And obviously being from a up on a perch and looking over the game really gives you a lot of insight. So it's kind of that, just studying details and that and decision-making. If I'm doing it for another player, it's the same thing, kind of seeing what opportunities they could have taken advantage of or decisions they could have made differently. And then we just kind of discuss what they saw during the play. Because for me, jumping back into the game and playing again, it's kind of that same thing. I want to see what's going on in the game from the ice level, playing in it and having the, you know, experience of it as well. So that dialogue with the player, what'd you see, what'd you feel? And then we dissect it like that. And in my own game, I did, you know, that's how I got to doing the platform stuff, was that's what I saw so much benefit. And then when I get into the game situation, I've already seen it, I've already pictured it, and it just, you know, I can execute a lot faster.
So what do you think is something that maybe you can do easily over video and really get that video to game transfer, and you don't so much need to be on the ice doing lessons with the kid or professional player? Like, what can you utilize video for to really drop into the game the next day?
I think for me, a lot of offense and a lot of plays are it's like sequences. A lot of things happen quite often. So it's kind of catching on to patterns and being able to pick the patterns up. And that's, you know, that's something where you can study game film, and that's what's important is what's happening in the games. What are the trends in the game and where are the places to take advantage of again? So that's somewhere where you really start to build with video, is like the picture memory and seeing the play and envisioning the play. And again, like I mentioned, that's why I did my own game. I still do is, and then those things happen fast. Then you see the mistake or you see the opportunity and you can take advantage of it. And video can help you do that if you're studying it the right way and you're talking about it and having the player, you want them to see that play. So it's not somewhere I'm telling them what to do or the coach tells them what to do. It's you want to have that player see the hole or see the opportunity. And then, you know, from there, they're, you know, they start to change their thought process going into that situation.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Before we keep diving any deeper here, I want to go back like 15 or so years. We're ballpark the same age, Greg, too. I remember watching highlights of you on like YouTube, and I remember watching like the videos of everything on YouTube, like live. Like, what do you attribute your hands to?
I mean, I worked hard on my game. I spent a lot of time. I was a rink rat, and I always had a stick in my hand, whether it was a hockey stick or lacrosse stick. One of the two always, and I was always working on that. You know, really working on feeling the puck and feeling the stick and just being comfortable doing different things. And I'm back in those times, I was not shy to be creative. And that's somewhere where that bringing that creativeness to my game, into my stick handling and how I, you know, maneuvered the puck, it really helped me with kind of conquering feel and touch. And then it's when you can kind of get that, you know, let's say call lacrosse style stuff with the hockey puck or batting it out of the air or kicking it off your skate. These kind of things are very complex. If you can conquer those, then, you know, just normal stick handling is very easy. So it's a walk in the park. So just kind of pushing boundaries with things and really challenging myself when I was even just playing around and on the concrete, shooting on a net by myself, doing different kind of things with the puck and just being creative. And then again, lacrosse was a huge factor. I felt lacrosse really opened up my wrist and opened up my hands and taking the same motions from the lacrosse stick to the hockey stick.
Yeah, it's funny you say that. So like you're definitely not the first player to have played lacrosse and hockey, but I feel like you might have been the first to play on a 3D plane the way you did. Like you were playing in the air more, I feel like, than other people. Is that really just from lacrosse? Like who did you draw inspiration from, or was it just strictly from lacrosse?
It was a lot from lacrosse and you know, I used to mention that I use the air a ton. I make probably more sauce passes than I do flat passes because I find sauce passes changes the whole dimension when you're buying time and space. A puck in the air kind of times it with speed. It changes different variables as far as what can get picked off and makes it tougher for for opponents to really take away things from you if you can learn how to use the air. And then, you know, I did a lacrosse thing only a few times in a game situation, but it changes the whole dynamic, and it's starting to happen now, and guys are doing it from behind the net all the time. And I see it, and I hear a lot of, you know, there's not a lot, but there's pushback of why, but like, how else could you score from behind the net? And for the, now we'll call it the Sveshnikov, but it was obviously the Mike Legg, that goal. I saw, I think it was Gary Gates did it for Syracuse lacrosse team. He jumped from behind the net. It's called the air gate. And it was such a unique and dynamic play and creative. And now that we're seeing that in hockey, I think it's great. I think it's really cool. Finding different ways to put the puck in the net.
Let's talk about that pushback, because I've always been so fascinated by like why there is this pushback. You know, do you think that that is starting to, obviously in some circles in the NHL, like you said, Sveshnikov's trying it, so it's at least gaining like some acceptance. But I'm curious what you feel about, you know, like just generally speaking, how there's still pushback, and maybe not just that example, but things that need to be conquered in the game that kind of get some, I don't know, old school ruffled feathers. Like, what do you think about all that?
I like the players pushing the envelope and being innovative. And I think there's different sides of the game. I think now we're realizing when you see, you know, there's cap geek, what's it called? Cap geek, cap friendly, whatever these sites, you start to see what kind of money's in the game. It's good for entertainment. And that's something where hockey, I think, lagged behind for a long time, is understanding the entertainment value of the sport. For a long time, I think a lot of the entertainment value was the rough and tough stuff. And now we're seeing that change where we're talking about, you know, concussion syndrome, you know, these things that are happening, CTE, and that rough and tough stuff was a big factor of hockey for a long time. You know, the line brawls and the bench clearing brawls, and that was the entertainment value, where I think now the game has to get more creative and embrace the skill instead of trying to say, stop doing that crap and finish your hits. It's more like actually finish less hits and get more skilled. The game's really going that way. So I think that's entertaining for people to watch. You got to think of ways to, you know, right now it's obviously different with no fans in the building, but when there are fans in the building, you're going to have to, you know, find ways to entertain and be a business in that sense. So I think it's somewhere to think of it in that regard. It's, I think the grips will loosen a little bit and let guys kind of have some freedom. I mean, at the end of the day, too, it's not about showboating. It's really about trying to execute and make a play to help put a goal on the scoreboard for your team. And then for me, drawing from my big inspiration growing up was Michael Jordan, watching the way that he dominated and, you know, dunking from the foul line with his tongue out. First, it was entertaining. It was unbelievable that he could dunk from there. And then, you know, at the end of the day, it's 2 points on the board. It's a win-win-win. And I think that's somewhere where the hockey game's starting to come to. You're seeing them celebrate the skill a lot more. So it's exciting to see.
Yeah, you love to see it. I remember when Patrick Kane did the ear, like, I can't hear you, after Matthews did it, like 6-6. Yeah. It's an entertaining game. I'm loving where we're going with possession and whatnot. So kind of going from old school to new school. I know you played for Dale Hunter in London. I'm curious what you kind of learned from him and how he coached and how he coached you specifically and where that's taken the game. Cause he's obviously had so many great players through there. I mean, he's had to put a stamp on the game somehow.
Yeah, definitely. Dale was such a competitor and really learned how to win under Dale. You know, the things that he would do during the game on the bench and the way he coached the team was really unique. And I talk about it quite often when he made in-game decisions, it was amazing how fast it paid off. Whether the momentum was swinging the other way for the other team, and he would make a quick line change it up totally, whatever. Put like these examples, used to throw like Presti up on my line. Presti would go out and make a big hit. We get the puck back, wind up getting a scoring chance or score a goal that we take the momentum back just by him taking my right winger off, putting Presti there because he knew we needed a little grit. And these in-game decisions were all to win. And he had such a good pulse on the game. So I learned a lot about that and the way he watched and he see what the game needed and he make the call. And he, you know, it was fun to be a part of because we did win a championship under him and won the Mem Cup and had a record season the 1 year. So really learned how to win. And when it came playoff times, the things that he would do to win, it was amazing. It was fun to be a part of on the bench because you see what he was kind of doing, and it was effective, and it's been effective. I think he's well over 800 wins now. I think I speak pretty clearly about what kind of coach he is, and a couple Memorial Cups and a bunch of OHL championships. So the way that their passion for winning, him and his brother Mark, it's great to be around. It makes you feel good as a player to be in that organization because you know the team's going to do whatever needs to be done to win.
Well, you also faced some adversity. You guys had some great battles against golf a few years. I mean, how has adversity played into your success?
Yeah, no, I had my first year there in London, actually, I had some, Dale was tough, really tough on me. And I got, I didn't play much in the playoff series against Guelph in the Western Conference Finals, as he wanted more of the defensive shutdown players to play. And that's what he felt he needed to win. At the time, it was pretty hard to take, pretty sour, but it lit a fire under my ass for the next season. I came back and pretty pissed off at him and wanted to prove myself to everybody else and show that I could play. And, I wound up being only second in the points in the playoffs to Corey Perry. And we ended up winning a Memorial Cup. So he lit a fire and that was his decision. He thought it was what the team needed to win. And I, I accepted it. I wasn't happy about it, but Dale is not scared to make the tough decisions and do what he thinks, again, like I said, do what it takes for the team to win. So I was at the harsher end of that for that year, but I still respect the guy. I have a ton of respect for him because we did win the next year and it did light a fire under my ass and, played the very good hockey the next year and played the right way and played both ways. I was more of an offensive guy and that's how I grew up. I was really offensive and I needed to be taught, there's two ends of the rink. And it's not that I, was like a cherry picking, cheating player. I was a centerman. So I was, kind of back helping the D. Most I was always in my own zone. It was just a little bit of attention to detail is what I lacked, chasing the puck around, those sort of things. So you mentioned it, and then finally sat me. So he hammered his point home.
That's funny. Grew up in New York, obviously American. Was it OHL all the way for you? What was your journey like there?
Yeah, I started playing Tier 2 in the Ontario Provincial League at 14. And Tim Conley was a guy that I looked up to as my mentor and idolized him and watched his path go through Erie in the first round draft pick to the Islanders. So it was kind of tailoring that. And we, I was having some success at, 14, I was pretty high up in the league in points. And at 15, I led the league in points in the OPJHL. And then it was kind of clear, I didn't want to stay at that level for three more years to go to college. And getting drafted first overall in the OHL was pretty clear what my path was going to be. So wanted to take the next challenge right away. And that was presented. The OHL was, the biggest challenge and best hockey I could play at that time. So it was pretty clear to us.
Yeah, no, that's really interesting. Okay, I want to pivot now. We've mentioned it a few times, your platform, 44 Vision. How did it all start? What's the origin story of it? And then obviously we'll dig into it, but I'm curious how it all came about.
So I started working on Instat, just going through the stuff. My old agent, Pat Poloni, handed me an account to go check it out. And he's like, I think you really like this. And I got on there, started playing around with it. And I really enjoyed the tools of being able to illustrate and kind of break plays down and highlight, again, show players these opportunities that were available and what to look for. And then from there, I started working with a few players in Czech Republic. They had great feedback and guys really enjoyed it and really kind of got the concept of it and understood my help, what I had to interject in their game. And then from there, I was playing out in a senior circuit thing with a guy, Dave Cochran from the Texas Titans. We were out in Jackson Hole, Wyoming, and I was just kind of telling him what I was up to and where I wanted to take it as far as make it into a platform, have a bunch of coaches on there. And from there, we partnered up and started building this thing out. So that was last January, literally a year ago this weekend. And it's been a unique ride and it's been a lot of fun. We built something pretty cool.
Did you play in the Jackson Hole tournament last year?
Yeah. So we go to Jackson Hole, there's Vail, Breckenridge. So I came out for that. My buddy played Christian Beaudry. I played Tier 2 junior with him and grew up playing Bantam hockey. We grew up playing hockey together. And I was going out to Corey Perry's 1,000th game in Dallas. And Beaudry was like, bring your stuff, man. Come play with our men's league team. And I was like, I kind of contemplated it, but I was like, wait a minute, I'm going to miss the Paris dinner the night before. Like, I'm here to see Paris. I'm like, maybe another time. So he introduced me to Dave Cochran, and I was like, I can't make it this weekend, but maybe I'll do another one. And he set me up with that Jackson Hole weekend. It was awesome.
That's super cool. Yeah, it's called the Black Diamond Hockey League. There's teams from Aspen, Bozeman, Breckenridge, yeah. Jackson Hole, Park City. That's awesome. That's like a bucket list thing. Yeah, that's awesome. Okay, so obviously you took it from this just like a kind of an idea, and then what can you attribute like your growth to? Like, how did you decide to take it from like, okay, this is a cool idea, to like, I'm going to build this out, I'm going to get a website, I'm going to hire a bunch of coaches? Like, what's that whole thing been like?
Yeah, so I really wanted to create an ecosystem for the coaches, and I thought other ex-players or even current players would enjoy this part of it and enjoy passing on what they know about the game and their experience in the game and their, you know, tips and stuff. So I wanted to have an impact on the growth of hockey and overall. So I started actually talking with the girls because I wanted to help the women create a lane and get recognized and also pass along their knowledge. Like, they're very knowledgeable. They're very skilled. They're unreal at hockey. And I think for me, I wanted to find a way to help them create a lane to give back to the game for the growth of women's hockey. And then also at the same time, being able to get compensated for that, being an expert, so to speak. You know, they're on the Olympic team and playing the NWHL and these sort of things. And there's a ton of value of them handing on, passing on their knowledge to the next players and helping that game grow. And, you know, in my opinion, that's what I felt like the game needed for women's hockey, is having that turnover and having the girls that are kind of on their way out, passing it back. You know, I think like the men's game, you see a lot of guys doing that, going back and coaching peewee or bantams, and the knowledge stays in the game, where unfortunately the women have to, you know, they kind of have to go and get jobs, or they have to figure something out. They can't donate all the time, and they're not getting compensated for that, all that time they put into the game. And that's where I went first. I started talking to the girls and they loved the idea and loved the concept. And I started talking to some ex-teammates of mine, and they loved the concept, loved the idea. And then we built it out to, we got about 36 coaches now. I think it's a great resource for players looking to climb that ladder that we all went through.
So who are some of the defensive experts? Because obviously you're an expert on the offensive side of it, and you were absolutely wonderful player there, but you obviously said you struggled on the defensive side of things. So how did you go about filling those voids, and what are some key areas of hockey IQ and the defensive end that people aren't thinking about?
Yeah. So I got a guy like Glenn Metropolitan, who is, he played third, fourth line in the NHL, but he's actually a stud as well. He went over to Europe and tore it up and led the leagues over there when he was over there. So he understands both sides of the game, as far as, you know, sometimes you got to turn it off the offensive side and play strict D. That being said, he put up some good, decent numbers in the show when he was on that third, fourth line. So Metro's a good guy for that. Craig Cunningham, really good player. I played against him in my pro career, and the way he played on both sides of the puck are really something players can benefit from and take care of your own zone. And, you know, for him as well, he was a scout for the Arizona Coyotes for a long time, for a few years. So that gives him another kind of sort of feather in the cap, where he can help players of what the observers are looking for, you know, what kind of things stick out, or what things are, you know, can help your game and that sort of thing. So those guys were the forwards that really came to mind. And then Danny Sivret and Freddie Meyer, a couple of ex-teammates of mine and good buddies. And those guys, I got to play with them both, and the way that they played in their own zone, and smart, very hockey IQ was very high on both of those guys. Not big, massive D, so they're more thinkers of the game and more strategic on how to get the puck back and how to move the puck and how to create offensively without giving up. So those guys were, I thought, they're a huge value add. And that's how I went about it. A few of the first couple players that I had, that was the thing. I was like, I don't ask me on the D side. Like, I'm not the guy to ask. I wasn't the shutdown guy. I'm not the plus minus leader. So like, you're going to probably want to keep, you know, do an offensive session with myself. And then I would definitely advise doing it with one of the other coaches to see it from a different perspective. And that's something the platform really I wanted to have, was if a player comes to this platform, they have all the resources they need as far as, you know, information and knowledge. On whatever side they want. If they wanted more offensive help and how to create, I can definitely help that. And again, a Metro can do that as well, or a Cunny, but that's the power play and offensive creation was kind of my specialty. But you know, there's resources for them to pick up whatever they need from the game.
Yeah, like you said, 36 coaches and counting. So it's obviously a great resource. Talk us through the process. So someone reaches out to you or gets a hold of, you know, the info on the website. What's the process like from there to becoming a client?
Yeah, so they sign up on the website and then we get notified and then we set up whoever they choose. They get to pick their coaches, who they want to use. They get three choices of coaches in case the first or second are busy or whatever, they're full, and then they get the third choice. Or if the first is available, obviously they get it right away. We get notified and then that coach sets up a Zoom call with that player and then just have a, you know, a little back and forth, see what the player wants to work on, get to know the player a little bit. So when we start watching their film, we kind of have an idea of what to look for and how to help them instead of going into a blind. So after that Zoom call, you know, the player gets set up with a library and the coach gets the game film of that player. And we go and cut up shifts and we put them in the library for them. For them to study. And then once we upload their, for their session, we upload their clips, we set up another Zoom call and kind of go over them together. And I think that's where the value is of having that back and forth with the player. Like, what do you see? Here's what I think you could do. And if it's somewhere where the player can't see themselves doing it, that's where we take the next step of like, hey, here's some, you know, practice, purposeful practice plans for you to work on for these things that are kind of lacking in your game. And so you can be executing in these areas when these opportunities present themselves. So it's kind of a finding the spots where they can get better or helping them maximizing their games. If they can't do it and they don't see themselves doing it, then we help them in the practice plans.
That's awesome stuff. And I know people can definitely get some value out of that, especially picking your brain and others that are so good. I'm curious, maybe what are some of the favorite areas of the rink, and maybe just diagram out some plays for us the best you can of how you like to create offensively and help people create more offense.
You know, I talk a lot about categories of the face, categories of the offensive zone, and faces of the net are the two terms that I use a lot. And I just try to simplify the game as much as I can for players so they can see it in a different light, in an easier light. You know, so, and I was talking about the game, and this actually Josh Robinson, a goalie on our platform, was like, I was talking about how I saw the offensive zone and how I like to teach it. And he was like, you're going to love this diagram that I have. And it's actually the way I was describing how I saw the game. He's like, there's a chart for the goalies that shows how the goalie played the offensive zone. And it was basically fit right to what I was saying. So it's been a really big help, information to pass on to the player. So categories are basically how the goalie sees it, how the goalie plays the angles. So that goes into faces of the net, right? So I always try to manipulate the face of the net, change the angles, if you want to use different terminology. But if you also categorize the offensive zone, and you talk about faces of the net. So it's, first of all, you try to get to a category where the face of the net is more available to you and you have a better angle on the shot. If you can't get to that category or you can't get there on your own for a shot, you try to find a pass. So what it does is it helps you, first of all, see if you can get there yourself. And then second, right away, process, is there an option that's there to pass to get a great ace scoring chance or to give my player a good look at the face of the net? And these kind of things really help, I think, simplify it for players. And when you diagram it out, for me, it makes it a lot easier. A lot of the guys really enjoy that information and see it in a different light. So it's all this other stuff that you're doing in the offensive zone. If you're not trying to get into a category where the face of the net is, you know, you have a good chance of scoring, like, then in my opinion, you're wasting your time. If you're not trying to execute and you're not trying to attack or, you know, get to the net or make a play to the net, you're doing, then what are you doing really to be blunt about it? But, so then that's where we talk about those categories and we talk about ways to manipulate them and ways to get sticks out of the way so you can make these plays, salesmanship. And when you're selling something to get what you want out of it, you got to know what you want out of it. And that's how I try to help the players. Like, what do you want out of this situation? What were you thinking? Like, well, now watch this. If you do this, you get this D stick to move. And now you get to take a step inside here. You're 3 feet closer. Look at the face of the net now. Do you think you can score? And really walking them through like that and to help them visualize it. And it just shapes their thought process a little bit. And the players, you know, they come out of it pretty confident knowing that they have some new kind of idea inside the offensive zone instead of just cycle it, get it back to the D and everybody go to the net. You know, there's more you can do inside there.
Right. Yeah, that's amazing. Is there anything that stands out for you, men or women's or both really, as like a common mistake that you see that really at like any level you can just like bank on being able to like add this to someone's game?
That's tough. That's not really one specific thing. I don't, each player is unique. Each player is different. And there's, you know, that's, there's not one, I don't think it sticks out to me. That's, I could say certain, like a small tip was like always trying to come out of the corners with your forehand, manipulating it so you come out of your forehand. That's something that a lot of players don't think about. They just kind of, you know, just trying to grind it out on the boards, but that's not a huge detail, but it is, you know, it's a small one that adds up. And I think a lot of players don't think about that going in. They just kind of, you know, you got a pre-plan going into the corner, how you want to come out of there and be effective and have the most control. And I think coming out of there, whatever way you can find a way to come out of your forehand, it really gives you a little bit more of an edge to execute a play.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I'm going to ask another bad generalization question then. Are there
fire away?
Yeah. Yeah. Are there any differences like fundamentally you see between men and women hockey players that are maybe surprising to you?
Not really, to be honest with you. I think starting to watch some women's games and a lot of the details are the same, you know, where, how to execute, how to get into these categories that are effective to the net and some thought process. So there's not that much. I think the only, you know, the difference of women's hockey to men's is the men's have a little bit more accuracy with the long range shots and the long range plays. You know, obviously I think it comes down to a thing of strength and you know, going clappers from the blue line bar down is realistic in the men's. And there's a few girls that can do it in the women's, but I think the long range shooting is what sticks out to me.
So off this, are there any star clientele of yours that we know about? I've heard some rumblings that you may have done some work with Rossi, and maybe what are some things that you're seeing at those higher levels that guys are keying in on and asking questions about?
Yeah, Rossi was awesome. I got to do a camp with him last summer and in Austria for 3 weeks and worked on some video clips for him. And it's really about finding those scoring areas and where to be effective. And with a guy like Rossi going in at 18, first round draft pick, you're trying to give him realistic views of what he's going to see when he gets there and what kind of things, you know, again, practicing with a purpose. So these routes are specific to what the realistic looks are when you're walking off at that high level like that. Cause junior, it goes, you know, he had a big point season in junior. I understand that fully. And those lanes, some of them are the same, some lanes that you can still execute at the NHL level. And some things are really unrealistic. Guys are much better positioning and small little details to manipulate. And again, be a salesman to get what you want out of it. So it's really thinking about it and then executing in practice plans and getting the routes. So you're super comfortable. You're almost conquering those routes. But that's it really. Those guys are kind of finding those sequences or finding those trends that are presenting themselves. And then how do we get through there? How do we get to that spot to execute? And how do we, again, manipulate or sell to get what we want out of the situation?
I want to follow up real quick on what do you mean by talking about routes? Are we talking like rolling speed or what is routes for you? What are the consistencies that you're seeing out of these high level guys and even how you would think just about routes in general?
So for me, a lot of the stuff like playing off the markings on the ice and the faceoff dot's a big one. I think a lot of offense revolves around that faceoff dot on either side. And running the routes is a lot more than it seems. It's a lot of footwork and it's a lot of your hands and feet got to be ready when you get to the certain spot. So it's that having that route be conquering it. So it goes back to, for me, it's footwork. It's really having your feet ready to execute when you get to the dot or certain markings on the ice. And that's what I try to pay attention to is like, if you get to here, look what the face looks like and like what category you're in. How do we get there? Again, it's about footwork. And that those practice routes are with the purpose of that. So you're really, when you're out there by yourself, you're, you know, there's no pressure, but you're doing the small things of like, okay, what do my feet feel like? What do my hands and feet like feel like together? What's my release feel like from this spot? How do I get my foot placement into a good shooting position from here? At the same time, 2 or 3 seconds before that, I was manipulating, selling something to get what I wanted out of it. And those routes are really, again, I said it 3 times now, but it's a lot of footwork. It's a lot more thought process into it than you think. And there's other pieces of it, like shoulder shimmies and a lot of D watch your chest. So it's about, you know, being deceptive with your chest, faking right, knowing you're going to go left, okay, now there's the crossover piece with my hands got to come from the left to the right or from the right to the left to get to here. How do we release? That's a route to me. And that's something that's really, you can practice till you're blue in the face. And you just want to make sure you're absolutely comfortable with these things.
Earlier this pandemic, not to date ourselves, I saw you on a hockey analytics night. I can't remember what the thing stood for, Hanuk. Anyway, it was an analytics like Zoom video call, public, and you were kind of like one of the, you were introducing 44 Vision, but then stayed active on the call. And I was curious, like, what do you see analytics spot in hockey? Like, where does it fit in with all this?
For me, on this side of it, helping the players, it's really categorizing what the hot spots are and the hot zones are. For me, I understood, I don't know how to do analytics. I don't know how to break them down. I couldn't do them. I'm not on that side of it, but watching them and seeing what they represent, it shows you hot spots. So for me, coaching the players is like, look at these spots that are effective, or look at these spots that have the best percentages, and look how you are in them. So to kind of bouncing them off the players like that. So I feel like analytics are great for categorizing and organizing, you know, what's going on in the game. And I feel like our job at 44 is like teaching the now what. And that's how I felt when I played my last year in Austria. It was like, there's all these stats, but it was like, okay, like now what? Like, tell me, I see these things, but like, are you going to show me something from there or teach me something from there?
Right. Needs to be actionable. Right.
The next piece is like, okay, like how do I execute from these spots that are, you know, higher percentages, or how do I get there? And then we talk about, you know, probably said it 1,000 times now, but routes, what routes do we take? What do we do on these routes to get to these spots? And how do we make them realistic for me as an individual player to get there to execute? That's something where I think the analytics really help the players and help me as a, you know, kind of a coach to work with the players with their numbers and their, you know, what they got going on and how to extend plays. You know, if they're not, they don't have much ozone time with control of puck, like how do we keep the puck under stick? Not for analytics sake, but like to find the right plays and find the right passes that are effective and continue the play. You know, you don't want to be a guy with the, you know, your turnover ratio or bad pass ratio is way higher than your effective, right? Kind of, I guess it's common sense, but analytics shows you exactly where that is. So that's, they're unique for sure. I just be cautious of being totally only analytical, you know, analytical based in your brain doing things. You're not doing things for analytics. You're using analytics to improve your game for sure, to see where your deficiencies are and where you can get better. And then you watch the film and you see what's realistic to change or get better at. So it's definitely unique and it's, you know, it's helping the game evolve.
So a lot of people are using analytics, like you said, to figure out which areas of their game is weak, but maybe more general questions. Maybe what is some of the best off-season work you've seen players to do to really make large steps from one season to the next? Because there's only so much time. So what are some things that players can do to really make those big jumps? And I know you've worked a lot on your mitts, but curious what you think.
Yeah, I might say it is biased in some regard because I have a company that does it, but it's literally studying your game film from the previous season and figuring out what you want out of your game and then practice specifically on those things. A lot of the time players just go out in the summertime and we all get together and 20 of us go on the ice. We do 15 minutes of drills. We all do the same drills. They're usually flow drills. And then we scrimmage for 45 minutes. It's not working on your game. You know what I mean? I think it's more practicing with a purpose and taking the ice time. If you're going to be on all summer, some guys like to shut it off and go away for 2 months and come back and pick it up. But the guys that are working, it seems like a lot more guys now are going all summer long and getting very specific with their training and getting things that they're deficient in. And that's something that I think is huge. And I started doing that when I played with the Islanders with Brad Wheeler, and it was very impactful in my game. I felt so much better going into training camp. I had much more control of my game and I was confident in it. And that was one of the two summers I skated with him, and it was much more specific stuff, purposeful and practicing with a purpose instead of just, I used to do the same. I used to go out all the time. Just, I thought I skated for an hour, so I was good. So I think that summer where really focusing in on what you want out of the game. And that's what got me good when I was a kid. I used to really, you know, sometimes you lose that. You get going through your career and you forgot about what the home base was for you. But for me, it was a lot of cycle work as a 12, 13, 14-year-old kid working with Don Kernan out of Syracuse and his son, Donnie Kernan Jr., on shooting. It was cycle work and shooting and how to score off the cycle. And those were very, you know, specific stuff. And when I was top of the circles down, you know, from anywhere from 13 to 18, 19 years old, I was very, very confident. And I let that work go away a little bit. You know, as again, I got to the pro level, I just would go on the ice for an hour and I'd try hard and work really hard and come off sweating, but I didn't have that purposeful training and purposeful practices. So my game lagged a little bit. Then again, I went with wheels, dialed it back in, and I felt much better. But practicing with a purpose and really kind of that summertime is a great, I think 3 months to really work on what you need to. Because once you get into the season, it's flow practices, it's, you know, a lot more team stuff, and it's not so much time for you to work on that individual stuff.
So you've had a few off seasons with some NHL franchises, and what are kind of the resources they're giving you on the off season or even in season? Because I'm assuming it's going to be very different between a first round pick, seventh round pick, and someone who's on an AHL deal. You know, what kind of resources they're giving you and what that looks like, and where do you think that teams can go to really maximize the player development?
I mean, that's somewhere where the summer times are your own, and that's for you to kind of dive into your game. That's how it's kind of changing now. I think, I don't know if it's changing now, but a lot more players are using individual, call them skills development coaches or whatever we're called. There's a lot of guys investing in that, seeing the value of it, and working on their game with an individual person that they trust and they like their, you know, kind of information. So it's more the players, it's on them to go and get that resource. But when you're younger, you got the camps, the rookie camps in July. Rookie camps are really somewhere where they bring a lot of skills development people in there and work on your stuff, skating, stick handling, all this stuff. And then when you're a little bit older, you're on your own. So it's really what you make out of your summer. And it doesn't matter, I don't think, as far as a draft pick, whether you're first round, fifth round, or whatever, they really want to give the resource to anybody that's under the organization. And, you know, actually a seventh rounder is probably more valuable to give that stuff to. When those seventh rounders turn into players, it's huge for the team, huge for scouts, huge for whoever picked them, found them. So they really invest in those guys as well. They invest in everybody.
One last question, and thanks for your time. We really appreciate it. Curious, you know, just big picture, what's the vision for 44 Vision? Like, best case scenario, 5 years from now, 44 Vision will be fill in the blank.
We'll be, again, an ecosystem for players that are coming out of the game and want to give back and have kind of a lane in it for to be a job, so to speak, and then evolving in somewhere where we're helping players get placed and being advisors, so to speak, and using our experience and our contacts to open doors for players. And so we develop them and then help them find the right fit, right spot for them, where to play and how to climb the ladder to where they want to get to in pro or wherever it might be. In Europe, you know, obviously having great contacts there. So I want to be, 44 Vision to be a global company where we're helping players all over the world and get to where they want to be and developing them. And then at the same time, offering guys that are, or women that are coming out of the game somewhere to find like a team setting and feel like a family fit and have a somewhere where they can be involved in the game and kind of work remotely. But that'd be great just to have that for people to look forward to and be a part of. And once you kind of get in that experience and that knowledge kind of collected together, it's a huge resource. You have an experience in the game, like a lot of these coaches, 10, 15 years, 20 years in the game, that's a huge value and huge asset to give back and help other people develop and kind of give them the secrets to unlock the doors.
I got to say, I think Dan and I need to move our clients over to your platform. Clearly, you guys are doing something right over there. It's exciting.
Yeah, I appreciate it. No, it's exciting. It's a lot of fun. So we're doing some off-ice stuff, off-season stuff in the summertime. So we're going to have these position specific camps, where we got 10 clients, we'll do 10 centers, 10 defensemen, 10 wingers, whatever that looks like. So it's specific and small groups and really can grow. And again, the coaches that you work with during the year through the video process, you'd be doing off season stuff together with and developing there. So kind of trying to hit it at all angles.
No, that's wonderful. So I only got one question left and it's kind of off the board here. or I guess kind of maybe a two part here. Dan Fritchie is a Cleveland boy, so I maybe want to hear a good story about him. And then you spent a full year with Patrick O'Sullivan, which I want to say you both are more outgoing than most. So I'm curious if you got any good stories with you two.
Yeah, Danny Fritchie was my line mate in London. Fritchie was awesome. He's such a good guy. We had a blast together. I love playing with him. He drove the net so hard. He just was like a madman. Once we got over the blue line, he would go 100 miles an hour to the net. I loved it. I'd just throw sauce on his tape back door. And if it didn't connect, then Fritchie would just bury the goalie. He caused so much crap because he couldn't hit the brakes. But Fritchie was awesome. I don't have any too good of stories, that are going to be crowd pleasers, but I really got a chance to play and appreciate his game and how hard he played. And he came back and played with us after playing the NHL. So it was cool to see that and learn from him and see what kind of pace an NHL guy would have, playing junior. He went and played at 18 in the show and then came back at 19 with us. And Sully, yeah, Sully was a veteran when I got drafted to Mississauga, and he was the super vet. He's a 2-year, 10-year guy, but no, I mean, Sully got along great after the, the initial, the rookie kind of lets you know where you sit as a young guy and where you stand on the team. And after that kind of, fades away. We had a really good bond, and he was one of the most skilled hockey players I've ever played with. I never seen anything like it. I remember watching him one time in Kingston. He came over and he took a snapshot from like the faceoff dot in the neutral zone. It was such a hard shot. It went in and out before the goal even moved. I'd never seen a shot this hard. And when he wanted to shoot the puck, he could lay on it. Sully was an unbelievable hockey player. He'd get mad sometimes and you just go out and do whatever the hell he wanted. You know what I mean? Like, he's just like, okay, I'm going to go score. And he'd go score. It was nuts. So really got a chance. And we used to play rebound. Our goalies hated us because either one of Patrick or myself would start on the rebound shots. We would usually take all 10 of them. And Sully would go post it in. I'd go next and go post it in. It was fun. It was fun to be around those guys. Really great hockey players. And it was a couple guys that I got to learn a lot from. That's something, as you get older, you realize how many great players you played with and the things you picked up from them. Little tips here, a little thing just from watching how Sully used to shoot the puck, change the angle, and the goalie would have no chance. And it's one thing Dan Balsma taught me when I was 20 years old in Wilkes-Barre. He's like, Trimpy, if I can tell you one thing, he's like, learn one thing from every guy that you play with. And that can be anything. It could be what they do for their pregame meal. It could be how they tape their socks. It literally doesn't matter what you learn. Like, pick up something from each guy. And that was unique advice, and it's something I tried to do through my career. That's value. That's, again, like I talked about experience in the game and having a long pro career. You play with all these people. You're getting information from different people all over the world and that do things differently, and their past brought them here on a different route. And it's really, again, a lot of value in that.
That's wonderful, and I love that last piece. Learn one thing from every guy. Sometimes it can be the opposite of positive. There's things that you may want to avoid as well.
Yeah. No, it's not always good, but you try to find the half glasses half full, but there's some teammates. It's tough to find them.
I thought your favorite though was that year you got to play with your brother in Syracuse. That had to be a fun one.
Yeah, we had a blast. We really did. We had a great time together, and it was good to, play the, be able to stay at home and play junior. And it was a great level, like that, the OPJHL for us was a great route because it was a good league. It was very OHL like, it was very competitive, a lot of games and very physical hockey. And, as you mentioned at 14, 15 ish, I was really kind of leaning towards that OHL. So it kind of shaped our game, but playing with my brother, we get the bus rides all the time and, brotherly love, picking on each other, chirping each other and scrapping on the bus all the time. The boys loved it. It was entertaining. And, we enjoyed it. It was great for our parents too, to be able to be in one place. growing up playing youth hockey, he's 3 years older, so it was like he's in one part of the state and I'd be in the other part of the state. So it was tough. But in junior for 2 years, we got to be in the same boat, same place at the same time. And that was great for us.
That's awesome. Well, Rob, can't thank you enough. This was a ton of fun. I've learned quite a few things and love what you're doing over there at 44. Excited to see where it goes in the future.
Thanks for having me, guys. I appreciate your time. Sorry to push back today. I had to get the pond hockey in, man. Had to happen.
All good.
This is how you know you're a true hockey player, right?
That's right. Yeah.
Exactly. Sorry, I can't. Got to go play.
Got a game, pickup game.
Yeah, awesome. Thanks again, Rob. Really appreciate it. All the best to you. Thank you for tuning into the Hockey IQ podcast. We are Hockey's Arsenal, Greg Rivak and Dan Dukart. Together, we've come together to create a platform and a community to expand on hockey intelligence, hockey IQ, whatever you want to call it. We're very passionate about seeing this game played smarter and better and continue to develop itself to the next level and staying on the cutting edge of things. So you can find us at Hockey's Arsenal on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube. We're also at hockeysarsenal.com. From there, you can find some resources and some options to work with us. We're excited to continue this. If you enjoyed this episode, please like, subscribe, follow, and share. You can also join up for our newsletter as well, where we're going to tackle anything Hockey IQ related. So we're excited to have everyone here and continue to build.
That concludes this week's episode. Thanks for joining us here at Hockey IQ. If you haven't already, take a quick moment to hit that subscribe button, give us a thumbs up, and drop a review. If you want to be a great teammate, even recommend us to a friend. You can follow us at Hockey's Arsenal on Twitter and Instagram. Check out the website, hockeysarsenal.com, where you can subscribe to the weekly newsletter. You won't regret it. Catch you beauts here next week for a brand new episode.